welcome to record it. Does it work? Okay. Yeah, I want to start this off. First of all, we got a small group today, so we can keep this informal. If you have any questions, and I don't know the answer to, I'm sure Dr. Darren will be in the back. He's got answers to everything, and David Sandler has answers to everything Darren doesn't know. So feel free to interrupt. My name is Jose Antonio. I'm actually the CEO of the ISSN. I've been running this organization since 2004. So if you have any questions about any of our other conferences, our big one is in Clearwater Beach. For those of you who love the beach, I would highly recommend you come to Clearwater Beach June 20 and 21. I know, Andrew, you'll be there, right? You'll be tweeting away. So put that in your calendar. It'll be a fun event. And even if you don't want to go to a seminar, I could always hang out at the beach. So it's we had it there 2 years ago, and I think everyone had a blast. Now, on the schedule today, after myself, David Sandler, we'll have Rob Wildman as well, Darren Willoughby, and Jake Wilson. It'll be really a wide variety of topics. So between the five of us, we're going to probably cover pretty much most of the questions that you have regarding sports nutrition and supplementation. And what I'm going to present to you today is actually, I get a lot of questions about sort of what I call the supplement list. You know, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And so what I wanted to do is sort of give you this simple, what I call the rule of three, since we seem to remember things in threes, on just sort of a laundry list of dietary supplements and how it applies to performance, how it applies to body composition, and things like that. And it's really meant to sort of get you to also ask questions about different dietary supplements and see what value they might have for particular sports. Now, I have a very simple philosophy when it comes to sports nutrition and supplementation, and it's this. If it helps or has a neutral effect, you should try it. And obviously, you know, with if cost is a concern and you can't afford to buy this stuff, you know, that certainly would preclude you using it. But in general, there's no reason not to try some of these things, particularly when, you know, there's some data, supportive data that show it might help. So if it helps or has a neutral effect, certainly give it a try. And I put together a list here, and it's certainly not an exhaustive list, but it will sort of touch on some of the main ones and maybe some minor ones. And certainly there's a lot of others that you could put on this list, but I figured I'd put these because between myself and all the other speakers, I think we've tried all this stuff, and maybe those of you in the audience, you've tried this stuff. Some of it works really well, some of it works marginally, but again, if it helps or has a neutral effect, why not give it a shot? So this is the supplement alphabet that we're going to go over. And again, if you have any questions, just raise your hand or yell out. Now, the rules I gave to myself were this. Had to be human studies only, because there is a lot of animal data on some of these supplements. And, you know, not to, I don't want to beat on animal data, because for my PhD, I actually did animal work. And there's a beauty to animal studies in that they're extremely well controlled. Human studies tend to be very noisy. There's a lot of things you can't control. And having been on both sides of the equation, having done human work and animal work, I can tell you this, the drawback with animal work is, you know, I always use the analogy of my, you know, my daughters, we have three pet cats. It's your pet cats don't eat what humans eat. Your pet rats don't eat, if you have a pet rat, they don't eat what humans eat. Hamsters don't eat what humans eat. Dogs don't eat what humans eat. So how much applicability is there to human studies in the field of nutrition or supplementation to humans? It's a little tough. I mean, there's a role for animal work. But for this particular exercise, we're going to deal with just human studies. I'll mention at least three of them. Some of these actually have hundreds. Others have, I was lucky to find three human studies. Good morning, Michelle. Thank you for coming. And then I'm going to tell you the dose of some of these things. So, and you also have that in your handout. Now, I have a rating system based on my love of outrigger paddling. I live in South Florida. I paddle regularly around the Miami Beach, Key Biscayne, the Virginia Key area. And outrigger paddling is basically open ocean paddling. It's what I would call sort of a odd endurance type sport. And so I have these numbers of paddles to determine whether or not these supplements are good. So if you see four paddles, this stuff is epic. It's a must for everyone. You see three paddles, it's good stuff, but not quite epic. Two paddles, what the hell, try it. And if you see just one, well, if you get it for free, take it. So oftentimes I get so much stuff for free, I just take it because it's free. So I don't know if you guys have that advantage, but oftentimes free things are the best things. And then you'll see my random editorial comments, sort of my 2 cents worth on some of these things. Okay. Alanyl glutamine, or AG. What do we know about it? Well, you can rehydrate with AG, and it maintains basketball skill performance and visual reaction time better than water. In fact, water, remember, is the number one most consumed ergogenic aid. It also increases time to exhaustion during mild hydration stress. And it also reduces infectious complications in ICU patients. See, I had to really reach to find some human work, and I looked. I'm like, okay, well, ICU patients, not really exercise, but hey, it's human. So, so limited data, but promising, certainly promising. So you need 2 grams in a solution to rehydrate, and I, you know, my rating system, 2 paddles. What the heck? Give it a try, right? Arginine. Now, this one's been around forever. Reduces the oxygen cost of moderate intensity exercise, extends time to exhaustion, okay? Arginine plus antioxidants increase anaerobic threshold, and these are in old people. And then adding arginine to, and this is cheating a little, adding arginine to a sports drink increases glucose oxidation and lowers the O2 cost of exercise. What's interesting about arginine is there's a boatload of data showing it really doesn't do anything. So I had a hard time finding data to show it does something. So take 6 grams, 1 hour pre-exercise, and, you know, I'll give it 1 paddle. If you get it for free, take it. But it's not really high on my list of things to take. Quick question. What provides the red color of salmon meat and the red color of cooked shellfish? Michelle, you got it right. Astaxanthin, that is the answer, right? The answer's not in the handout, is it?
Okay.
Well, I figured you guys had figured that out. Yeah, astaxanthin. So I put these little quizzes in there every now and then. So astaxanthin, interesting data, improved 20-kilometer time trial. This is in cyclists, increased power output. Prevent exercise-induced free radical production and depletion of antioxidant defenses in young soccer players. And again, I was reaching. I was like, I need to find some human work on astaxanthin. What do you know? It might improve skin health. Don't ask me how. I don't know why, but I found something in some very obscure Polish journal. Okay, so that's astaxanthin. The dosing looks like 4 milligrams per day based on the exercise data, and I say, hey, what the heck, try it. It's still new. We're still learning about it. Certainly eat a lot of salmon, eat a lot of shrimp. That's good for you. But, 2 paddles for astaxanthin. Bicarbonate. There's actually some good data on bicarbonate. It helps 2,000-meter rowing performance, improves cycling performance, improves swimming performance. There's actually a good amount of data on sodium bicarb. It's good stuff. Consume about 0.3 grams per kilo body weight. It's a boatload of sodium bicarb. That's the only problem. Good stuff. I give it 3 paddles. It's good stuff, but not quite epic. And I think the primary reason is that it it gives you GI distress. So you got to be really careful when you're using bicarbonate. I would titrate the dose slowly so that you don't get GI distress. But the data is incontrovertible. The stuff works. It helps buffer the drop in pH with intense exercise.
Is that like baking soda?
That is baking soda. Yeah, so literally go buy your Arm & Hammer baking soda, experiment with it. If you're someone who does anaerobic work, wrestling, 400-meter dash, football, rugby, bicarbonate would work. But something works better. The branch chains, leucine, valine, and isoleucine. Okay, there's some good data on the branch chains. Lessens muscle damage, accelerates recovery in weight-trained males, increases resistance fatigue. Enhances fat oxidation during exercise when you're glycogen depleted. And cheating a little, when you combine it with 0.5 gram of arginine, it suppresses exercise-induced proteolysis. This is endurance exercise. So there's some good data on branched-chain amino acids, and certainly because leucine, which is sort of the king of all the essential amino acids, is part of the branched-chain group, I think it's a good thing to take. 2 grams minimum, maybe add 0.5 grams of arginine to it. I give it 3 paddles. So the branched-chain amino acids, a good standalone supplement, and some really good data, beetroot juice. Interesting, fairly new category. Work from the American Journal of Physiology, it enhances exercise tolerance. Also enhanced time trial performance in cyclists. This was work published in MedSci Sports. And improves running performance. So there is some promising data on beetroot juice. Take about 70 mils of it 3 hours pre-exercise. And again, there's not a lot of data, but what there is promising. So I'd say, hey, give it 2 paddles, you know, try it. What the heck? Might help you. For those of you who walked in late, my rating system is 4, 3, 2, and 1 paddles. Okay. For those of you who are paddlers, you get it. If you're not a paddler, you think I'm odd. Okay. Quick question. Is beta-alanine an essential amino acid? Andrew says no. And Andrew's correct. It is not. Remember Private Tim Hall. That's how you remember the essential amino acids. PVT-TIM-HALL, phenylalanine, valine, threonine, tryptophan, isoleucine, methionine, histidine, arginine is conditionally essential, then lysine, leucine. So, you got that memorized? Good, okay. Beta-alanine, now, I love this stuff, there's a lot of good data, improves exercise capacity in old people, it augments lean body mass gains, improves sprint performance and endurance cycling. And there is a lot of human data on beta-alanine, so it wasn't difficult to find anything. 2 to 6 grams daily. I give this a 4 paddle. 4 paddles, this stuff is epic. Everyone, it's a must for everybody. Well, at least it's a must for everyone who produces a lot of acid or has sharp drops in intramuscular pH. There are some sports where beta-alanine may be completely useless, but for a lot of team sports, it's actually quite useful. Beta-alanine versus sodium bicarbonate. Little editorial comment here. I would suggest take beta-alanine because you don't suffer from the GI distress. So all athletes involved in anaerobic sports, especially those that involve or emphasize the lactic acid energy system or fast glycolysis, they should supplement with beta-alanine. Some people call it betaine. It's pronounced betaine. It's kind of an odd pronunciation, but there's some interesting data on this. Increases total reps and volume load for the bench press, reduces measures, subjective measures of fatigue, and also increases upper body power. Again, some, not a lot of data, but certainly promising data. I'd give it 2 paddles. What the heck, give it a try. And a daily dose of about 2.5 grams. One of the common side effects of caffeine consumption is dehydration. True or false? False. Interestingly, if you look at just the caffeine data, where they put caffeine in water or they somehow flavor it so you don't know if you're getting caffeine, there's not really a diuretic effect. But what's interesting is I looked up coffee data because everyone complains about coffee makes me pee. Well, there is some coffee data showing that coffee does increase urine output quite a bit compared to just water. So maybe it's coffee and not necessarily caffeine. So, but caffeine by itself, not a dehydrating agent, and perhaps coffee is. So caffeine, I love caffeine. One of my favorites of all time. Caffeine does everything. And it wasn't hard to find supportive data on this. For instance, it enhances resistance exercise, reps to failure, also reduces pain perception. That's why you see caffeine in over-the-counter pain meds, because it dulls pain. Acute and chronic use increases physical activity in sedentary adults. It sounds like if you drink a lot of coffee, you move more. So it's kind of interesting. Caffeinated gum enhances cycling performance. So you have caffeine in coffee, caffeine in gum, caffeine in energy shots, caffeine everywhere, caffeine in pills. And this definitely gets a 4 paddle. Hell, I'd give it a 5 paddle if I could, but my rating system went from 4, 3, 2 to 1. And the dose is roughly 3 to 9 mg of caffeine per kg body weight. Some people sort of go in the middle, roughly 5 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram body weight as the dose. What I'd suggest is play with a dose somewhere between 200 mg and, I don't know, go up to 600 mg, depending on how big you are. It'll definitely help. I would say caffeine is tied with creatine for the best ergogenic aids ever, because it helps both ends of the athletic spectrum. There's data showing caffeine helps strength stuff, strength power performance, and there's data showing that caffeine helps endurance performance. And that's certainly true with creatine as well. So ask yourself this question. What is the compelling reason to not take it? What's the compelling reason not to take it, right? Carbohydrate. Now, this is sort of, a lot of times sports nutritionists sort of ignore carbohydrate when in fact, or sugar, when in fact the two most commonly consumed ergogenic aids are water and sugar. I mean, you try exercising in the heat of Arizona or South Florida without water, you're in deep trouble. And certainly putting sugar in water, i.e. a sports drink, will help performance. Here's a study. You don't have to, I mean, there's so much stuff on, so much data on carbohydrate, it's really not hard to find. Going back to 1988, improves stroke performance in tennis, improves running performance, improves force output during weight training or resistance exercise. Now, the dose is highly variable, so I didn't put a dose there because different people play around with different dosing depending on the sport. I would suggest use a gel or a sports drink, experiment during training. And I give it a four paddle rating. This stuff is epic. It's a must for everyone. Now, clearly, if you're in a physique athlete, you know, sucking down boatloads of carbohydrate may not be the best thing. But for performance athletes in general, it can be quite useful. And obviously, there are sports where you're not going to be eating a boatload of carbohydrate. And those are sports that emphasize the phosphagen energy system or ATP-PCR energy system, like baseball, softball, javelin, high jump, all of those really high-power, high-velocity, high-power sports, obviously you don't have to consume that high a level of carbohydrate. Now there's the carb-protein combination, and typically this takes the form of chocolate milk or a sports drink spiked with protein. Some good data showing, in this case, chocolate milk, improving exercise performance, enhancing glycogen restoration, and also carbohydrate plus whey protein isolate improves recovery and adaptations endurance exercise. So just that combination alone is in general good. Again, the dose is variable. Experiment during training. And I would recommend try at least 20 grams of each post-endurance exercise. So you gotta, with the macronutrients, you're really playing with the dose a bit. There's not really a finite dose or discrete dose that you would see with, let's say, caffeine or creatine. Carnitine. Interesting data. 2 grams of L-carnitine L-tartrate increases androgen receptor levels. 3 to 4 grams of L-carnitine taken before exercise improves performance. And there is some supportive data that it might improve body comp and enhance energy expenditure. Now, with that said, I don't give it a super high rating, only 2 paddles. What the heck, give it a try. At a dose of about 2 to 4 grams daily. The carnitine data is kind of eh. It's, you know, it's like eating a sandwich that's neither good neither bad. But it gives you calories. So, if you haven't tried it, I'd say give it a try. Quick question: what protein is typically considered slow acting? Casein. You're absolutely correct. Casein. So casein. Some good data on this: enhances muscle protein net balance when taken post-workout. It's a great nighttime protein. Consume it before you sleep. So good data from Medicine, Science, and Sports and Exercise showing that. And it has a prolonged anabolic effect because it is a slow protein. Again, the dose is variable. I would suggest you consume it mixed with whey protein. Consume it at night. Really, with any protein, I'd say it's, you know, because the two most important nutrients you consume are protein and fat. You can't go wrong with casein, particularly as a nighttime protein. So I give it 4 paddles. The stuff is epic. It's a must for everyone. Quick question. Which of the following is not true regarding creatine supplementation? A, there is no evidence that it helps exercise performance in kids. B, it's great for the treatment of traumatic brain injuries. C, it's a dehydrating agent and causes cramps. Or D, it can increase the size of muscle fibers. Which of the following is not true? I get a C. Any others? How about A and C? Sort of tricky. It was, you're probably thinking like this is school and I can only pick one. Well, I sort of cheated. You could actually pick two. A is not true and C is not true. There's actually some data in kids that it helps exercise performance. It's actually data in kids as young as infants that you can give creatine monohydrate for the treatment of TBI, traumatic brain injuries. In fact, one of the best reasons to take creatine monohydrate has nothing to do with skeletal muscle. It has to do with protecting your brain. So football players, MMA fighters, boxers, anyone who gets conked in the head should absolutely be taking creatine monohydrate. It would be silly not to because it protects the brain. So creatine. There's so many studies, it's you can't even keep track of them anymore. Makes you bigger and stronger. I mean, there's a boatload of studies. Helps your memory and your brain performance. Pretty cool. If you want to be smart, take it. If you don't want to be smart, don't take it. improves endurance and anaerobic performance. So helps strength power stuff, helps endurance stuff. This is an easy one. The daily dose is 5 grams. You can maybe take as low as 3 as a maintenance dose. Again, creatine and caffeine, the two most important ergogenic aids you could ever take. Certainly, this is an easy one. It's a 4-paddle rating. This stuff is epic. Creatine. It does everything. And it's kind of silly because, you know, I'll get papers from a lot of my friends, and sort of the running joke is, what does creatine not do? It helps the brain, helps muscle, it helps strength, power, performance, it helps endurance performance, it helps memory, it helps neuromuscular diseases. It seems to help everything, which is really odd. It's safe and effective, which a lot of people don't believe. So again, ask yourself this question. What's the compelling reason to not take it? Creatine and the data on creatine and on caffeine are so overwhelming and robust that I have a hard time justifying why you would not take it. And just as a little anecdote on the side, my wife and I run a travel softball team in South Florida. They're very competitive. They're typically nationally ranked, and my kids, I have twin girls who are 13 years old, they've been taking creatine since they were 6 years old, and they're big, strong kids, they're big, strong girls, and we mix it with their yogurt, so to them, it's like taking a Flintstone vitamin, it's just what you do. In fact, it's really odd when a 13-year-old girl says, hey, where's my creatine? It's when you have college athletes who won't take it because the athletic director or strength coach or someone says, oh, you shouldn't take that stuff, you'll get drug tested, which, you know, it's just absolutely stupid because how do you drug test for something that's in food? But the probably one of the more annoying things about creatine is there are more myths and misconceptions about it, despite the fact that there's more data on it than on really any other dietary supplement. So absolutely, I think if you don't care about the muscle stuff, take it because it helps your brain. Quick question, energy drinks can be accurately described as a heart attack in a can. A heart attack in a can. Now, I'm sure you guys are too smart to agree with that. And the only reason I bring that up is I've had students or a student come up to me and mention that a biology professor of theirs described energy drinks as a heart attack in a can. So even supposedly learned people who have a science background make stuff up, which shouldn't be surprising because people make stuff up all the time. And this whole energy, you know, this heart attack in a can thing is just, it's kind of amusing, but there's people who believe it. Now, energy drinks, it's hard to separate energy drinks and caffeine since caffeine really is the crux of the energy drink category. There's other things added to it. And so the data I show you actually relates specifically to energy drinks, particularly Red Bull. There's about 6, 7, 8, I don't know. There's a few studies on Red Bull showing that it helps performance. In this case, lessens pain perception, enhances sprint ability, improves cycling time trial performance. I mean, there's actually good data on it. You don't hear about it because Red Bull really doesn't care. I'm sure that, you know, selling 2 to 3 billion cans a year, you know, you really don't have to talk about how it helps exercise performance. They're just happy that people mix it with vodka. I mean, who cares about exercise, right? So, consume a can at 2 at most. Again, I give it a 4-paddle rating. This stuff is epic. Why? Because, you know, you can't go wrong with caffeine. and even Red Bull or and some of the other energy drinks in a category, they don't really have that high a dose of caffeine. That's sort of the thing that people miss, when in fact drinking coffee actually tends to give you a bit more caffeine than drinking a can of these energy drinks. So got to keep it in perspective. Heck, anything with caffeine is going to help. So that's why I love energy drinks. The essential amino acids, interesting stuff. This Hungarian journal, it improves walking performance in the elderly. When combined with carbs, it simulates muscle protein anabolism. And again, combined with carbs, it enhances muscle anabolism. Now, 6 grams of essential amino acids plus carbs certainly has a strong anabolic effect. I give it a 4 paddle rating. And gram for gram, it's actually more anabolic than whey, but it tastes like dirty socks. So getting a good-tasting essential amino acid product is tough. It's a lot simpler to just double the dose and consume whey protein. So if you want 10 grams of essential amino acid, just consume about 20, 25 grams of whey protein, and you don't have to deal with the nasty taste. But the essential amino acids do work quite well, and they're really quite anabolic. Ginseng. I think I've tried ginseng once, maybe twice. Some interesting data on it. This one study from, it looks like a Chinese medical journal, reduces exercise-induced muscle damage, inflammation, helps insulin sensitivity. And then I started reaching. I'm like, I need to find something here. So improves pulmonary function in COPD patients. May enhance oxygen utilization. And I give it a 1 paddle. If you get it for free, take it. Now, there are people who swear by ginseng, and I say, if you swear by it, keep taking it. But I'm not completely convinced that, you know, in the scheme of things, when you have to purchase product and you're going to use it, I don't even think it makes my top 20 list, to be honest. Glucosamine, or plus other joint supplements. Good data on it. It's somewhat variable. I mean, there's data showing nothing happens, but there's data to show that it does help. So remember, if it helps or has a neutral effect, try it. When you combine it with chondroitin sulfate quercetin, it improves symptoms of osteoarthritis. Another study showing it improves knee osteoarthritis and also lessens pain. Now, I give this a 3 paddle rating, good stuff, not quite epic, mainly because the data on it is a bit variable. I'd say like half the studies show something, half the studies show nothing. And this is one of those where when you start taking it, when I talk to younger people who don't take it, they're like, well, my joints are fine, why should I take it? Which is true, I guess. And it's not until people get older that they realize, well, maybe I should try it. And but I guess it's sort of an admission of age, because I would suffer from knee pain and shin pain, not even from running, from walking. And I'm like, holy crap, I guess I'm getting old. Maybe I'll try this glucosamine stuff. I've read the data on it. I just refuse to take more pills. I'm like, I'm not taking any more pills. But then one day I'm like, you know what, I'm going to take this stuff. And I've been taking it for now 6 years, about 6 years, and I don't have pain anymore. So for me, it's one of those things where I know the data, it's sort of a coin flip. It'll either help you or have no effect. So I've been taking it for 6-7 years, and I don't have pain anymore. So for me, it works. For other people, it may not work. But I think, what's the drawback of taking it? Nothing. Well, I guess you might lose some money, but in terms of health, there is no drawback. So I suggest, you know, if you have an old joint, take the stuff, because you'll have less pain. Glutamine, interesting amino acid. There's data showing it might reduce upper respiratory tract infections after intense exercise. It might promote muscle glycogen accumulation. And there's actually good clinical data post-surgery on glutamine. Now, I was at one point a huge fan of glutamine. I am not anymore. I would suggest if you get it for free, you should take it. The dosing's fairly high. I mean, there's people who will recommend like gargantuan doses of glutamine. And to that I would reply, why don't you just take a boatload of protein, which has glutamine in it? So would it be harmful to take it? No. I mean, you could take boatloads of this stuff and you're fine. But again, in my scheme of when you have limited time and limited resources, is it in your top 20 list? Probably not. Green tea extract. Now, there are coffee drinkers and tea drinkers. I'm not a tea drinker, but there is some interesting stuff on green tea extract. It's a fat oxidizer. It's somewhat thermogenic. When combined with weight training, it might improve body comp, and it might enhance loss of abdominal fat with exercise. Now, again, the fat loss data is really quite variable and tends to be neutral. So I'd say I'd give it a 2-paddle rating. What the heck, try it. With green tea, the dose would be 90 mg of EGCG, 50 mg of caffeine, taken 3 times daily. Quick question, name the downstream metabolite of leucine that may have anabolic or anti-catabolic properties. HMB, right? HMB, hydroxymethylbutyrate, right? Now, HMB, this is sort of, it's weird. HMB was something touted by Bill Phillips back in the 1990s as the new DECA, as in DECA, the anabolic steroid. And then it sort of died because the data really wasn't there to support HMB, and now it's there's a somewhat of a resurgence with HMB. Some newer data, it's anti-catabolic. Certainly, if you're resting in bed for 10 days, you might want to take it. Increases upper body strength, lessens muscle damage, and enhances muscle strength and mass. Now, this is one of those where you're dealing with something that's downstream from leucine. 3 grams daily seems to help. It's good stuff, but maybe not quite epic. Now, leucine. Everybody loves leucine, especially Jake Wilson. He loves leucine. Interesting data on this essential amino acid. Enhances endurance performance and upper body power in canoeists. Enhances strength in novice weight trainers. And post-exercise leucine protein ingestion improves sprint power and lessens muscle damage in cyclists. Now, leucine by itself, you know, I give it a 2-paddle rating. The dosing is 45 mg per kg daily. You know, I would say if you're going to take single amino acids, you're almost better off just consuming whole proteins. So you could get leucine, rather than taking leucine by itself, just take some whey protein. But if you want to spike with more leucine, that's even better. And just add some leucine to inferior protein sources like whey. You know, some people bitch and moan about how crappy whey is. We'll just add some leucine to it, and it becomes better. Add some branch chains to it. MCT oil. This was popular way back when I was a kid, and I don't know if it's had a resurgence, but there's some interesting data on it. Increased metabolic rate in fat oxidation in overweight. Enhances energy expenditure in fat oxidation, again, in the overweight. And medium-chain triglycerides plus chili increases diet-induced thermogenesis by over 50%. With that said, I think I've tried it once, and that's it. So I give it 1-paddle rating. If you get it for free, take it. The dose is variable, maybe 10 grams. Melatonin. Now, I've taken this to help me sleep, but there's some other interesting data on melatonin. Reverses oxidative stress, improves immunological defenses and lipid metabolism in football players, can even reduce muscle damage, okay, during intense exercise, and has a generally good impact on health, especially in the elderly and in shift workers, those who tend to work at night. Now, 3 milligram daily dose, what the heck, give it a try. I think some of the newer data on melatonin makes it worth considering, but we need more there. Phosphatidylserine. This is an interesting one. There's some interesting data published in JSSN showing that it helps golf performance. So if you're one of those who loves to play golf, take some phosphatidylserine. Can also improve cognitive function in the elderly and improves memory in subjects with subjective memory complaints, which is like most guys. I don't remember anything, so maybe I should take some. 200 milligrams daily. I give it a 2-paddle rating. What the heck, give it a try. I mean, we need more data, but certainly there's something worth looking into there. Quercetin. May enhance lean body mass, metabolic rate, and total energy expenditure. 7 days of supplementing can increase endurance in the untrained. And quercetin plus EGCG can be anti-inflammatory in trained cyclists. 500 milligram daily dose, and I gave it a 2-paddle rating. Again, what the heck, give it a try. Soy, everybody's favorite protein. Darren Willoughby says he does it every morning. He says it's the key to his muscle mass. Stimulates muscle protein synthesis post-exercise. Positive effects on lipid profile in postmenopausal women, and may promote lean body mass gains. In this case, it was a soy protein bar. The dose is variable. Perhaps consume 30 to 40 grams post-workout. Good stuff, but not quite epic. Certainly, if you're a vegan, your protein choices are limited, and you might have to consume soy just to get enough protein. If you're a carnivore, like probably all of you in this room, I would imagine you're all carnivores, soy is probably... The only time you get soy is probably in edamame or something, or soy sauce, which is like a milligram of soy. But, you know, it's good, but it's not as good as the dairy-based proteins or the animal-based proteins. Spirulina, this blue-green wacky algae, lowers postprandial lipemia, increases, oddly enough, I finding this was odd. I was like, wow, it increases isometric strength and endurance, enhances fat oxidation, time to fatigue. That was the one exercise thing I could find. Might improve allergic symptoms. So if you're going to the gym and you're sneezing a lot, take some spirulina. 1 to 3 gram daily dose. I'd say, what the heck, give it a try. So there's something there. I mean, there's antioxidant properties to it. It's probably a healthy food to consume. So once we get more data, we'll understand it more. But certainly, I'd give it a shot. What are the two most commonly consumed ergogenic aids? Anything. Water, that's right. Water and sugar. And people forget, water and sugar are the two most commonly consumed ergogenic aids. We all talk about creatine and caffeine and whatnot, but really it's water and sugar. So when people say, hey, I'm against you taking ergogenic aids, I always ask, well, when you're at a marathon, don't let them drink any water because it confers a performance advantage. Let them actually run the marathon with nothing. That would be truly leveling the playing field, okay? Sports drinks, which is what? Water and sugar. Gatorade's a better hydrator than water during 1 hour of moderate intensity exercise in trained kayakers. It improves 80-kilometer time trial in trained cyclists. And sports drink can increase endurance performance as well as enhance lactate removal, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of data on water and sugar. Water and sugar works. Certainly for the endurance events, water and sugar works. If you had water, sugar, and caffeine, it works even better. I mean, there's all these little simple tricks you could do to improve performance. And again, what's the dose? It's variable. You test it out during training. I'd say events longer than 90 minutes, it certainly would help. And I give it a 4-paddle rating. So water and sugar is good. Must for everyone. Sports drinks, if you're running, biking, paddling, or otherwise engaged in prolonged exercise in the heat, and you're sweating like a horse, you should certainly consume a sports drink. Now, what a lot of people do, they'll spike it with branched-chain amino acids or creatine or whatever. They'll spike it with their favorite supplement, which is fine. But really, the key to any prolonged endurance event is getting, water and sugar in your body. Whey protein. Now, certainly whey protein is probably the favorite of everybody. It's better than soy protein for lean body mass gains after 9 months. Augments tendon and muscle hypertrophy. I thought that was interesting. It augments tendon hypertrophy. And a whey protein-based cake is anti-inflammatory. Now, there's a boatload of data on whey protein. I just pulled up sort of randomly what would come up when I did a search. The dose is variable. I give it a 4-paddle rating. This stuff is epic. It's a must for everyone. Consume it as a meal or, for example, 20 to 40 grams pre or post-exercise. Again, the dosing depends on what type of exercise you're doing, how big you are, and things like that. But you really can't go wrong with consuming this stuff. Now, we're doing a little case study, which eventually will go into a full-blown study at the university I teach in South Florida. And we're actually having subjects consume protein in a dose that is double their body weight. So there's one of the guys is actually one of my fellow professors. He's 210 pounds, so he's consuming 420 grams of protein daily for 8 to 12 weeks. And I actually have a girl doing it. She's 110 pounds, so she's consuming 220 grams of protein daily. And one of the first things they've noticed after about 2 or 3 weeks of doing this is they do gain weight. One of the things the girls mentioned to me is that her pants are getting looser. So even though she's gaining weight, her pants are getting looser, and her kcal intake is increased by about 400 calories. So imagine a girl who normally consumes 1,400 kcal, she's now consuming 1,900 kcal, and she's losing body fat. So it's a nice, fun little pilot trial to do, but we're going to do something a bit more extensive in the spring, showing that you can actually bump your caloric intake a lot with protein and actually lose body fat and gain lean body mass, which, of course, is the converse of what you typically hear in terms of the calories in, calories out paradigm. So whey protein, certainly one of the very best protein sources, bar none. Now, the beauty of science is that it doesn't give a care. It doesn't care what you believe in. So I will now open the floor for questions and answers. So Q&A. Otherwise, I'll go in the back and drink me a shake. Yes, sir. Creatine versus creatine. It's interesting you bring that up because Darren Willoughby actually did a head-to-head study on creatine versus creatine monohydrate. And if you look at the marketing copy of creatine saying that you need a lower dose to get the same effects as a higher dose of creatine monohydrate, not true. When you do a head-to-head equal dose, creatine monohydrate works better. So the marketing copy of creatine doesn't match the science. And unfortunately, there's some of the marketing copy is a fabrication, I think, based on the data. There's no data to show that the creatine even works as well as creatine monohydrate. Okay. Yeah, actually, Jake Wilson in the back here, raise your hand. He talks quite a bit about the leucine threshold. The threshold is what, 2 to 3 grams, roughly? You need to hit 2 to 3 grams, and I think to get that, you don't need 30. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, you need about 20 grams of whey? Yeah, 20. Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah, so with 30 grams, I think you're fine. You'll certainly hit the threshold. Is more better, you know. There's a group of people who think that actually the better trained you are, the less protein you need. I think Stu Phillips believes that up in Canada. I sort of take the other tact. I think you can never go wrong with eating more protein because it still helps with issues related to body composition. Even if it doesn't go directly to muscle protein synthesis, maybe you tap out on that. It still helps with body composition because of the thermic effect of protein. So, but yeah, minimally 20 grams. Yes. Right. You know, you're right. It's people get so focused on that one variable that they forget all these other things that it does. So, but yeah, in general, you know, I tell people to get roughly 20 to 30 grams of protein per meal or per serving. So. Actually, the goal is, I told them, I said, I don't care where you get your protein, but they. What they find out just to consume that amount, they have to consume protein shakes. Like, what, particularly the girl, because she didn't eat much to begin with. I mean, 1,400 kcals is nothing. She actually had to lessen her carb intake just to literally make physical room for protein in her belly. The guy, on the other hand, he says his appetite is so, it kills his appetite so much that he doesn't want to eat. He's literally sucking down shakes all the time. So most of it, I'd say 50 to 60% of his calories are actually protein calories coming from shakes. The rest are food. And then he doesn't consume any fibers, carbs, because it takes up space. Because literally he has no space to consume all this stuff. Yeah. It's a fun experiment. You should all try it and see what happens. If you double your protein intake, I mean double your, get your body weight, double it, and that's the protein intake, I think you'll be surprised how not hungry you are and how much you don't even want to eat. I did it a long time ago. I'll never do it again because I like eating. I like eating fun food. I don't want to suck down shakes every day. It's just not fun. Any other questions, comments? Yes, sir? No. No, it's purely one of those sort of, I call it a real world study, where people just, you're consuming a boatload of stuff and it's coming in the form of protein. You know, I've never seen any data showing that consuming that much protein, you need any enzymatic help, at least externally. I'm not aware of any. I would imagine you have plenty of proteolytic enzymes in your gut that will break down proteins into their respective di- and tripeptides and amino acids. So, yes. You know, I would rephrase it. I think there is benefit to adding BCAAs to any sports drink, in addition to the hydration, the hydration benefits, also replacing lost sodium. I think the branched chain amino acids might help you recover a little quicker, so you can train harder the next time around. So, I mean, some people just add like 10 grams of whey, I've seen, to Gatorade as their way of getting some of these amino acids. Oh, yeah, actually, and sipping it during a workout, yeah. In fact, I've played around with that. When I've competed in some of these outrigger paddling races, I've experimented with a lot of things. One of them was literally Gatorade spiked with branched chain amino acids. One is Gatorade spiked with whey. And actually, I'll tell you, my favorite thing to drink during a race is actually Coke. I like Coca-Cola. And it's not even defizzed Coke, it's carbonated Coke, because I like the feeling of carbonation in my throat. And some of it falls on my face, that's okay, but you're in a canoe and water's hitting you anyway, so who cares? But I've found through experimentation, I actually like Coca-Cola. The sugar and the caffeine help me a lot. So everyone has their sort of personal, things they like when they do heavy exercise, and that's one of my favorites. Yes, sir.
So, like the carbohydrate, if we have an excess, I mean, we have a wonderfully expedient process of build-up, been over with the genesis of turning glucose into fatty acid or palmitate and invariably triglyceride. It doesn't really work that way in the body in terms of excess of protein. And so it's,
yeah.
I mean, the process for converting those carbon skeletons.
Yeah, no, yeah. Dr. Willoughby brings up a great point. I've always told my students that it's energetically difficult for your body to consume what we call excess protein or amino acids into fat. It prefers to oxidize it. If it's not used for muscle protein turnover, it prefers to oxidize it. That's why you get this crazy thermic effect of protein. Whereas, as you say, excess carbohydrate is quite easily converted into fat. So that's why when you see these diet studies where all they're doing is replacing carbs with protein and not dropping calories, that's why body composition improves. And I think what I find the most fascinating in this category is that there's still not even, I don't want to even call it a subset, the vast majority of people are still stuck on the too many calories will make you fat issue, when in fact, it really depends on the calories you're consuming. And protein calories, for whatever reason, it for body composition purposes, are much better than consuming carbohydrate calories. So I think all of you in the audience, I mean, certainly could spread that word around to your, you know, peers and to your fellow students. But I'll say this, Darren, your view, my view, Jake's view, we're actually in the minority. I find it really odd that there's most people actually disagree with us, but I guess you're allowed to disagree, but the data's there. I mean, you don't readily convert protein to fat. It's your body doesn't want to do it. Yeah. I'll have one more comment, and then I know David has to give a talk, but just sort of to segue with what Darren Wilby said. You know, the idea that protein stresses your kidneys because you got your body produces urea in response to protein metabolism, and you got to excrete it in your kidneys, and therefore your kidneys have to work a little harder. Well, I mean, that was sort of the analogy physicians used 40 years ago, saying, well, you shouldn't exercise because your heart has to work harder. And if your heart works harder, it's not good for your heart. Well, you know, if I'm out in South Florida sweating, well, my sweat glands work harder, right? All these things work harder when you're exposed to an environmental stress, and your body has wonderful ways to adapt to them. And eating a lot of protein, your body adapts wonderfully to it. I mean, we have mechanisms for it. We have mechanisms for adapting to a super high-fat ketogenic diet, too. So, again, all of these things, you know, I think what you guys, the audience, needs to learn is that there's a lot of data out there that contradicts what sort of is the common knowledge that you're taught. And, you know, I would implore all of you to look at some of this data and, you know, perhaps question who your instructors are, who your teachers are, and, you know, think about, you know, the conventional wisdom may not be wise at all, may actually be completely untrue. So why don't you take a 5-minute stretch break? I'm going to have David come up here and load his PowerPoint. And I thank you for being a kind audience. Okay, David.